Tom Baker here on Law and Gospel, and we're just still getting set up here. We'll be done in a moment, as we're going to be meeting with our good friend, Pastor Mark Smith. I don't know if he's in the studio yet.
Hey, Tom, I'm right here, right in front of you.
Oh.
How are you this fine day?
Well, you got a haircut.
Yeah, about a month ago.
Yes.
You just noticed it now.
No, I guess I just did. No, I'm pretending I'm Joseph. And
oh.
I'm going to get even with you.
Oh, you're going to get even with me, huh?
That is the Sunday School lesson for the following Sunday. Today's Tuesday, September the 13th, but on this Sunday is a story about Joseph, right?
You're talking about the Old Testament Joseph, right?
Well.
Not the...
They weren't the same person?
Not the adoptive father to Jesus, no.
Oh,
no, of course not.
That's right. Joseph died by then. That's right. Okay. Boy, I got to get my facts straight here.
Great story. Great story. Joseph and his brothers.
Yep. Joseph and his brothers. In fact, we had talked about it a little last week. In fact, that was Esau forgives Jacob.
Esau forgives Jacob, yes.
Which then led to the birth of Joseph, you know.
Yeah.
This week is Joseph and his brothers, which I find kind of interesting because that was the Old Testament reading, wasn't it, for last Sunday?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Jacob had died, Jacob had died, and now his brothers were afraid, oh boy, now that our father's dead, Joseph's going to get back at us for having sold him into slavery, you know, those many years ago. And so they, you know, they go and contrive this account that their father had, before he died, wanted to be sure that Joseph forgave them. And Joseph is just, you know, he's just heart stricken by the fact that his brothers are still not trusting his forgiveness.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be surprised because after this week, Joseph and his brothers, next week is Joseph and his troubles.
Joseph and his troubles.
Yes. It goes backwards.
I'm trying to think what
Potiphar.
I see. They talk about Potiphar. They kind of reverse it then.
And the week after that is Joseph feeds Egypt.
Oh, yeah, that seems out of order.
Well, maybe they thought it was a New Testament. And then the week after that, Joseph forgives.
Huh. Well, they must have, there must be merit to that somehow. They must have thought that through. And
it's not until the seventh lesson, halfway through, that we leave Joseph and we get to the birth of Moses.
It is a great story. No matter what order you tell it, it's a great story.
Well, today we're going to be talking about the section then of Joseph and his brothers, and it's the entire chapter 37 of Genesis is what we're going to be looking at today. And this is the Sunday school lesson, and particularly if a family has brothers and sisters, this is really going to be kind of interesting because it kind of starts out, I think the key verse is verse 4 of chapter 37. But when his brothers saw that their father loved Joseph more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him.
Yeah, I've always had trouble with that. You know, it just goes to show these patriarchs were not perfect people. They weren't always, I don't think, the best parents showing favoritism. I mean, you can expect friction. Of course, the problem is you've got multiple wives and you've got concubines besides. Well, you're going to have problems with that.
Is that personal experience?
Huh? No, but I just, you know, I mean, you see these, you see the foibles of these patriarchs, and of course they're sinners just like you and I, of course. But you know, Jacob, you would have thought he had better sense than to play favoritism with his sons Joseph and Benjamin.
Yes. I just listened to a really interesting talk show. They were talking about the problems that children have when their mother is divorced and marries another man and they have children.
Blended families.
And that the second child always seems to be more of a favorite than the original child, particularly because it is the child of the new husband also.
You know what I have found? I'll tell you what. If anybody out there knows, it is always difficult to find good counseling for blended families. That tells you something. It tells you how difficult it is. It's a difficulty. I mean,
Yes, I've had. I was just on the phone.
You can't find good counseling. It's hard to find, at least.
Yes, even if they call themselves Christian counseling.
Yeah.
I just got an email about somebody who said they had been going to counseling, but it was a kind of counseling that doesn't have long gospel in it, and so they weren't being helped at all.
Right.
You know, kind
right.
of thing. So when you're talking about good counseling, you're talking about Christian counseling with a law gospel perspective.
Of course.
It makes a huge difference.
Oh, sure.
I was talking to an individual recently. Her son and his wife seem to be breaking apart, and it looks like there's going to be a divorce. And as I listened to her, she was speaking again and again about the worries of the future. They have a child, what's going to happen to the child. And so in talking like that, they were really under the impression, oh boy, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And she could not find a good counselor. Now, from a law gospel perspective, I told them what the problem was. It was simply, it was kind of interesting, and you find this sometimes, they're worried about the future, not what's actually happening in the present.
They're thinking about the future.
And they don't know what's going to happen, and they think of the worst-case scenario.
Which may never come about.
Which not only may never come about, but even if it comes about, God is still going to provide a way of escape.
Oh, sure.
God is still going to get... And so the point I was making to this person is that God was out of the picture.
But that was the source of the friction, was thinking about what about in the future. That really, no kidding.
The daughter-in-law had made threats that they'll never see the child again and this sort of thing. And I was just making the point that from a legal point of view, that's not going to happen. You know, unless the son had beat up the child or something like that, they're not going to give full custody to the mother anymore. Both get it. Both may have equal time. And in this particular situation, there's even the possibility that the son would get custody and the wife wouldn't because of her new lifestyle and such. So it's kind of interesting. When people can't sleep at night, it's rarely about what's happened.
It's about what the future holds.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I can understand that. We're so... You know, we're so thinking about, how are we going to protect our things?
Well, isn't that true also with the brothers?
Yeah.
What are they worried about?
They're worried
Jacob
about
Jacob dies.
Well, they're worried about inheritance. They're worried about who's what's going to happen to them as opposed to his favored sons Jacob and Benjamin.
Yeah, yeah.
The sons of Rachel.
Right. And then when are they really worried after Jacob dies and Joseph is head of Egypt almost?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
What are they worried about there?
Well, they're afraid there's going to be retribution. There's going to be payback. Now that Dad is dead, I'm going to take care of you guys.
Yes.
I mean, in a negative way.
So what we have here is something that Sunday school children could be quite familiar with.
Well, yeah, particularly when you consider, kids are kids, and, my family, we fought a lot, I mean...
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had three sisters. I always wanted a brother, never got a brother.
Oh, no.
But let me tell you...
I mean, not oh, no, but...
Yeah, I had three sisters, and boy, I'll tell you, we did our share of bickering and fighting and that sort of thing.
Oh, boy. But, of course, you always came out on top.
I don't know. I got my first black eye from my oldest sister.
You're kidding.
No kidding.
Oh, you weren't the oldest?
No, second.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had two brothers, and I and the third one would gang up on the second. Yeah, it was just kind of interesting, and yet, so what we have here is, why were they jealous of Joseph?
Well, because, he'd have these dreams, for one thing. He'd have these dreams, and there was that that multicolored coat or that splendid, gorgeous robe that his father had given him. That was one thing. It showed his favoritism by that.
And what were the dreams
and
about?
And the dreams were about, he'd dream about, there were these sheaves in the field. They'd harvest
wheat,
things.
Yeah.
Sheaves of wheat or whatever grain it was. And all of the brothers' sheaves bowed down to his.
Yeah.
And then there was the sun and the moon and the stars all bowed down to, let's see, how did that work out?
Yes.
But anyway, even his father, even Jacob, didn't think, well, Joseph, are you implying that we're all going to bow down to you? You know, he even kind of resented the dream.
Well, he rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, we really got to look at this. You know, why did God give him those dreams if it led to such division in the family?
I've never thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, those were miraculous dreams.
Yeah, it sure appears that, you know, they did bear some truth in the end.
Well, no, they all did, you know, come to get grain from him.
Right.
And his brothers bowed down.
Right.
You know, after Jacob had died and such.
So why did God permit, I mean, I don't know, can we be sure that God was the source of those dreams?
Well, what is God not the source of?
Evil.
Well, were the dreams evil?
Not necessarily.
No, not at all.
God's not the source of sin.
No, God's not the source of sin. But, you see, the lesson I would do here is God gives many blessings and we turn them into sin.
Right.
We boast about... Oh, look at the Pharisees at the time of Jesus, because they had many flocks and they were rich. And they looked down on the poor people because they weren't as blessed, because they weren't as obedient, or there was something, you know... The guy born blind. What was the reason that...
Bartimaeus?
John 9.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
It was this sin or his...
Or was it
his
sin or his sin of his parents that he was born blind?
See, that's the kind of law orientation that you get. And was it a good thing that he was born blind?
Well, it turned out to be.
Well,
gave glory to God.
The fact is, it's always a good thing.
Sure.
It's just
all things work together for good.
Yeah, we just sometimes don't see it, and that's where faith comes in, where faith has to look beyond the superficial.
Well, are you saying, Tom? Are you saying that Joseph? The problem is he didn't show more discretion in sharing those dreams, or even not sharing those dreams, keeping them to himself. Is that where you say the problem is?
No. It said Joseph dreamed a dream. He told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more.
See, he probably should have kept him to himself.
Well,
but he was young. You know, he didn't know any better. Just
if he had done that, though. You know, he got a reputation of being able to read dreams, which came in pretty handy in Egypt.
That's right.
Remember, the first dreams he read was the butler and the...
The butler and the baker.
Baker. How come I can't remember that?
Yeah. Butler and baker. And the butler was restored, but the baker was executed.
Yes. Yeah. Didn't work out too good for the baker.
No, that's right. Sorry, Tom.
It should have been a butler and a smith working on horses or something.
Sorry. No smiths in the Old Testament.
So, yes, no smiths. There had to be.
Craftsmen.
Oh,
but not smiths.
Oh, I'll have to look up the word smith. There is. I remember the word. And he's smitten him. Okay, so isn't that where your name comes from?
No.
I'm hard-pressed to see whether Joseph was sinning here. I mean, if I had a dream and it was something where I was important, the trouble is my dreams are never important. I just had a dream last night again that I was rushing to get to a worship service and couldn't find the church.
It's funny. I had a similar dream myself. I call it a nightmare. It woke me up, and I couldn't get back to sleep.
Oh no!
I had one of these dreams where I was involved in a big worship service.
It was
either at the seminary chapel or somewhere important.
Yeah.
And I had put aside the instructions as to what I was supposed to read, where I was supposed to sit, and I got in there, and I didn't know where to go.
Yes.
It was a nightmare.
I know.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah.
We both had similar dreams last night.
Yeah, but you had a reason, because for a bit you were representing the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod when he went on vacation, didn't you?
Oh, you mean when they went out of on vacation?
Yeah, Matthew Harrison.
Yes.
And you know him well, and he asked the pastor, and if you would kind of take over. And I told
Pastor
you,
Golden.
Yeah, I told you should go right to the Synod headquarters, sit in his chair.
I don't think they saw it quite that way.
No, I'm quite sure. But the fact of the matter, I look forward to nightmares.
Well, you do. Well, it is fun to wake up from.
Oh, it's
well, isn't that the greatest feeling in the world?
You wake up and, oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so glad it was a nightmare.
I know. But you see, this wasn't a nightmare to Joseph, but it was a nightmare to his brothers.
Oh, yes. I really think he should have kept it to himself. But, you know, I think his youth, you know how you are with dreams. You like to share them anyway. They're kind of fun to share. And I think that was the problem. You know, remember his brothers? Here comes this dreamer. Let's do something about him.
Yeah. In a sense, so every reason given why the brothers hated him was really the fault of the brothers. First of all, Jacob loved Joseph more than his children because he was a son of his old age.
Right.
Number
right.
two, he made him a tunic of many colors, and then he had these dreams. And it's kind of interesting. It would be interesting what the Hebrew is here in verse 6. So Joseph said to him, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed." It's like an invite. And, of course, they interpreted that he would reign over them, and they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. I'm hard-pressed to find where Joseph did this in a way that was boastful. But I think the very fact that you would tell your brothers
right.
that...
Well, I have to say, my old Adam, if I didn't put guard on my old Adam, I probably would have felt the same way they did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, honestly, I can kind of see how they resented him.
Although, I would be thinking this, you know, let's put it into American, that, you know, one of these days you're going to salute me, you younger brothers. And I said, oh, maybe you become president of the United States, and that'd be really great fun. See, I would look at it that way. I said, I hope your dream comes true.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know I'm not going to be able to make it, but who knows?
Maybe your brother.
Yeah, maybe my brother will. It's kind of interesting. You know, this is just a joke that one of our listeners sent us, but with the economy the way it is, this CEO had to let go how many times? Oh, yeah. He had to end up letting go 60 of his employees because of the fact that the taxes and government fees and the insurance is going to increase in such a big way. And he was trying to figure out how to do it. So he went out and he figured a way to do that. He went out and found 60 Obama bumper stickers on his employees' cars. And he fired them. And he wrote a letter.
Well, that'd be basis for a lawsuit.
Well, this is a joke. So this is what I did. I walked through our parking lot and found 60 Obama stickers on our employees' cars and have decided these folks will be the ones to let go. I can't think of a more fair way to approach this problem. You guys voted for change. I'm giving it to you. I will see the rest of you at the annual company picnic. Now, if you're an Obama supporter, you know, that's not, you know, nice. But you could have done it with Bush or any of them because all of them, started under Bush, continues. And some real problems. I'm glad I'm a pastor. It's a lot easier being a pastor because you got God's word to guide you. A politician, boy.
You got to figure out which way the wind's blowing. And
not only that, but there's no right and wrong way a lot of times. Like, do you increase taxes or do you decrease them? That's not a biblical principle,
right.
So to speak, where God is...
What's best for the country.
Yeah.
It's always sometimes hard to determine.
Yes. See, the fact of the matter is the country's in a situation where somebody's going to suffer.
Right.
And so there would be no need for suffering if the amount of money was the size of a pie, say, 30 feet in diameter. The only problem is the pie is only 4 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
And so a politician has a really tough job. But I thought
about all you can do is stick with the Constitution, right?
You can, but a lot of times it just doesn't address your question. Mm-hmm. You have Keynesian economics and other economics.
Right.
Some say just by flooding money into the economy, that's going to bring people's jobs. And others say, no, it's just going to do the opposite. And people have evidence for both sides. So it's kind of nice being a pastor. And it's one of the reasons we don't bring politics kind of into your sermons and say, well, you know, like I was in an area where they were having a big election, you know, between a Democrat and a Republican. And they said, who would you vote for? And I said, and so they knew I wasn't going to answer anything.
No, you have to be very careful about that.
Yeah. They say at a meal you don't talk politics or religion, but we always talk religion. And we argue politics. I don't mind doing that. The only times I get angry is when you're dealing with somebody who's for immorality.
Yes.
Yeah. Then that's something more serious.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable with the abortion rate that people get upset over little things about people losing civil rights and such. But that's, in fact, I use that why gay marriage is absolutely wrong, not only because God's against it, but you take away the rights of a child to have a mother and father.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And who are they to decide you're not going to have a father? You're not going to have a mother. But, of course, when you believe in evolution, it's survival of the fittest, so it doesn't really matter. You know, if you have father or mother, it's just whoever is the fittest.
That's the problem.
And, and people just aren't consistent with it, or we have a lot more problems. So what we're looking at here is it was a family fight simply because, and this shows people's pride, because the brothers were envious of how Joseph was being dealt with. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So, when we get back from the break, although we'll continue the story here, we're going to be asking the question is, there's people listening to us with that problem right now.
You mean family friction?
Or friction over somebody maybe at work because they got a promotion and you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or friction because of neighbors that their trees are hanging over your garden and all the leaves are falling on it and they're not cleaning them up, you know?
Is this true to life, Tom, that you're talking about?
Well, I told them I would cut the limb later, you know, once the leaves were off.
It could just as well be about my yard, too.
Yeah. No, I had a big argument with the city. Our property ends, but then there's a hill going down to the street. And there's a sidewalk, and our property ends at the sidewalk. Well, we got ticketed for not taking care of the hill. And we said, no. When we lived in another town, the hills are done by the city. And they said, no, here, anything down to the street, you're responsible for cleaning. So
you got cited.
Yeah, we got cited, but we took care of it. We found the best poison we could and just put it all over, so now it's totally bare.
No, Tom, you don't mean that.
No, because I have a wife who goes out and she cuts it down, and then she put new plants in, you know, that don't grow as high and such like that. But I couldn't believe it. I said, I didn't buy that piece of property. Why am I responsible for it? And so isn't that interesting? You're meant to do something, and you get angry at city employees who didn't make the law.
That's right.
You know. So
it's like you're supposed to take care of your mailbox, even though that technically is not your...
What mailbox?
Yeah. That's.
What do you mean take care of it?
Yeah. Most communities, that's the mailbox really belongs to the city. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Well, but you're supposed to take care of it.
Well, I think in the old days, it was out on city property.
Yeah, that's what
know.
I mean.
Yeah. Whereas ours is attached to the house.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
I didn't understand that. Yeah. Well, we'll think of more ways why we're angry at people in a sinful way when we get back. But more importantly, we'll talk about what to do about it. Please stay with us through the break.
The Bible is a source of truth, and those who are engaged in that pursuit of truth are well served to study the Bible, to learn what it offers. That's what happens on the Bible Study program on KFUO Radio. Hear the magnificent teachings that are revealed as we take in its word. Participate if you like, or just listen to the Bible study and ask the pastor programs.
Exclusively underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, on KFUO Radio.
Luther Hostel 2011 is an event designed to provide growth in biblical knowledge and understanding. It's fun, and you'll have some fellowship as well, plus a chance to gain helpful insights for daily living for adults aged 55 and older. It'll be held October 1st through 4th at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. The theme is Public Service and My Lutheran Faith, presented by Congressman John Shimkus. Other activities will be held throughout the week. Fee $325. Visit csl.edu for more information. You can provide for the people you love and the ministries you care about, including KFUO Radio, through a charitable estate plan. By establishing a charitable annuity, trust, or other planned giving instrument, you and your spouse may enjoy cash payments for life and at the same time leave a legacy gift for KFUO Radio. Contact our gift planning specialist to learn more.
Call Joan Harwell at 800-844-0524. That's 800-844-0524.
At The Y, it's about more than sports and working out.
It's about making my community better.
Living a healthier life.
Spending time together as a family.
It's where I go to learn and play after school.
The Y strengthens communities.
By helping kids reach their full potential.
Encouraging healthy living.
And inspiring social responsibility.
Get involved. Find the Y near you. Visit ymca.net.
Daddy, don't you have time to read a bedtime story? I'm John Fuller with a Focus on the Family Minute. And if your child is asking that question, how do you respond? Rob Parsons recalls being too busy for his daughter.
Do you know, when Katie was four, I'd be reading her a bedtime story, and the phone would ring downstairs. And she'd say, Daddy, please don't take it. I'd make that call, then another call. And then after half an hour, I'd remember I'd not finished the bedtime story. Princess was still stranded in a castle somewhere. And I'd rush back upstairs, and the light would still be on, but little eyes had fought to stay awake as long as they possibly could. And, you know, I've written 13 books, I've lectured all over the world. All those things involved me having tens of thousands of business calls. I can't remember one that couldn't have waited 10 minutes while I finished a bedtime story.
Make the time now to invest in your child. I guarantee you'll look back and treasure these moments. A reminder from FocusOnTheFamily.com/parenting.
Tom Baker, Pastor Mark Smith back, and we're talking about Joseph and his brothers, and we're just dealing with chapter 37. But if you'd like to call in about a question about, you know, have you been envious of your brothers or somebody else or some situation, we'll be glad to talk to you about it. In the St. Louis area, the number is 505-7850, and long distance?
1-800-730-2727.
Yes, a lot of times the message of law and gospel is most helpful in dealing with specific situations, and that's what we're kind of doing today. We're doing it, of course, because this KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, so you're getting a distinctively Lutheran point of view. In fact, right after the program, I'm traveling up to Springfield, Illinois, to give a seminar to brand new people in adult instruction class. Adult instruction, what is that? Explain that a little bit.
Well, that's the adult version of confirmation, basically. Confirmation instruction.
Yes.
It's usually a little bit shorter.
Than 2 years.
Than 2 years confirmation that you go through with the kids.
Yep.
But it's performed for those inquiring people that are interested in full communicant membership in the Lutheran Church.
Yep, and we're going to be looking forward to talking to people about all that. In the meantime, we'll be there tonight and Thursday from 7 to 8.
You're going to drive up both days?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not walking one of them.
Well, that's a lot of trouble. I mean, that's very good of you to drive up there. I hope they appreciate you. Yeah, it's a little bit of a distance, you know.
Springfield, Illinois. It's not Springfield, Massachusetts.
It's,
no. In fact, I won't even...
A couple hours. About 3 hours, right?
Oh, no, no, no. No, to the church is
well, depending
1 hour
who, if you're driving.
Yes. In fact, a lot of people who are envious as I travel down the highway.
You can always find the time warps, right,
yes,
Tom?
I can always get people, you know, who does he think he is? And yes. So Joseph here is in a situation where his brothers, by nature, don't like him. What's the sinful problem within each of us that when we hear something good about somebody else makes us feel angry?
Well, that's just selfishness. You know, it's old Adam. It's our old sinful nature.
Yep.
You know, it's not really rational. You ought to be thankful, even if, okay, somebody else benefits, somebody else gets a promotion or wins a prize or something. You really ought to rejoice with them, especially if they're a Christian brother or sister. But you ought to be glad for them, especially, you know, it doesn't detract from you at all. Maybe it makes you feel a little bit less important. But, you know, what is so rational about not sharing the joy of somebody else's good fortune? Have you ever thought about that? That is pure evil.
It's almost on the basis of almost every law and order program.
Yeah.
Because
I guess it's people just feel like, well, their good fortune or their winning the award or the promotion, whatever, makes us look less. I guess that's where the... Other than that, it just doesn't seem rational to feel that way.
Well, it's a understanding a lot of times that God's making a mistake. See, that's the basic problem. That God made a mistake in what he allowed.
Mm-hmm. Should have been me.
Or somebody else. Or because a lot of times the situation, you wouldn't have been open for it at all.
Right.
Like, I don't think any of the brothers would have, except the oldest one, thought about anybody bowing down to them.
Right.
But when they hear that, and the youngest and the most favored, the one with the multicolored, wow. We see something how this works as we continue with Genesis 37, and they go on a trip with Joseph.
His brothers go out and they're watching the sheep, they're watching the flocks, and Jacob sends Joseph out to check up on them.
Yes,
you know, to report back and, you know, just to see how they're doing, how his brothers are doing out there with the sheep.
Yes, and while he was still afar off, they conspired against him to kill him.
Here comes this dreamer.
Look, this dreamer is coming.
Yeah.
Then we'll say some wild beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Now, was Reuben the oldest?
Reuben was the oldest, and he, of course, he stood to lose the most. I mean,
how
you know,
so?
Well, he... The oldest got the double share of the inheritance.
Oh, yeah.
And he knew that he stood to lose the most. If he was implicated in a crime against his brother, and secondly, too, he was supposed to be, he was more responsible. He bore more responsibility for his other brothers. He's the oldest. He's the one to kind of keep him out of trouble and that sort of thing.
And what was his long-range plan, which I found interesting?
I think he was gonna at least spare his brother, Joseph, get him out of trouble, and save his life,
and bring him back to his father.
Bring him back to his father, right?
Yeah, a lot of people don't think that. They think that all that Reuben did was just save his life, but still was in store for putting him into slavery. So they cast him into this pit that was empty, and there was no water in it. And look, here come the Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels.
Distant relatives.
Yes.
Ishmaelites are descendants of Esau. Isn't that right?
Yes. You know what I'm going to do next time is bring in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
No, they're actually, I think, descendants of Ishmael, who was the other son of Abraham. So that's a little bit more distant.
Oh, yeah.
But they're
okay.
Still relatives.
Well, they were coming down. And Judah was the one says, you know, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us call him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened.
And so it's Judah. This is what's great about this story, is the change that we're going to see in Judah over the chapters. Judah was the one that initially was for selling his own brother into slavery.
Yes.
And Judah is, of course, it's the tribe of Judah from which would finally descend the Christ.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Reuben wasn't there, by the way.
No, he was out. Wasn't there, and he comes back, and he finds, oh, they've already done this. So he feels terrible about it, of course.
He killed a kid of the goats, dipped the tunic in the blood, and then they brought it to their father, and we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine these guys, these brothers, having to live this lie all those years?
Yeah.
Think of that. I suppose Jacob might have been suspicious all along. But they had to keep this secret, dark secret, to themselves all those years.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's punishment enough, you know.
Yeah, you wonder, it doesn't say here how different they would have felt, you know, once they had to tell their father. I mean, it's one thing to do it out in the wilderness, but then to come home. And they could not console him.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Imagine having to live with that. And even when they got in trouble later on, they were always thinking, God's paying us back. God is paying us back for what we did to our brother those many years ago.
Hmm.
We would find that later on. That's the first thing they think of. God is paying us back. He's punishing us for having sold our brother into slavery.
So what you're saying then, God not only has a created order, but he has a kind of order he's created that wakes us up to that we're sinners by the consequences he puts in place.
And the conscience.
Conscience would be good, because they're looking at their father, they love him, and they're trying to console him, and they can't. And it doesn't say whether they tell their wives what they did or anything.
No.
But I can't imagine that they would have, because I don't think they would have kept quiet about it.
How old do you think these brothers would have been, varying ages? But they would have been adult men, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, they're grown men.
Yeah, well, even Joseph must have been old enough to go out to find them and such. So it doesn't, if it does, in the genealogy it says, and when so-and-so was such an age, he had this, and then that person. So you could probably find somewhere to get their exact ages. But
and remember, one of the funny things later on, as Joseph meets up with them later on in Egypt, they're mystified as to how he sets them at the table according to their age.
Oh, yeah.
He knows their ages.
Yeah. But they still don't figure
They don't get it.
Yeah, you can imagine how different he must have
looked. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we have people out there who are wondering, all right, I have these feelings. How do I get rid of them? Or how do I not operate on them?
Law and gospel, you know. I mean,
that's right.
It's coming.
The law's already doing its work.
Sure it is.
Because they know it's wrong. But we're kind of addicted to sin. So we, by nature, want to do that. So
we need to look to the cross and see where all our sins on him were laid.
Well, there's a specific passage that really starts out, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. It's Philippians 2. And it's really kind of interesting. But in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. And how do they bring that to the cross? Look, let each of you look. This is really a good verse. Verse 4 of chapter 2. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. See, that's really Jesus. And in fact, that's what he goes right to, Paul, to the Philippians. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. What does that mean?
Well, it means that he didn't dwell on the fact that he is God. I mean, he did not let that get the best of him to the point where he still acted in humility. He didn't hold on to his superiority and gloat on it and and exploit it to its full value. You know what I mean? He did not exploit his authority. You know, otherwise he would have never gone to the cross.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying there. I'm just not sure that would be my understanding. He did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, because there were a number of times he admitted he was God.
Right.
And I think what Paul's making the point here is that if I said I was God, I would be stealing from God, his glory.
Uh-huh.
Jesus wasn't. He wasn't committing robbery by saying he was God, because he is God.
Right, right. Okay. All right.
So that's how I've always understood this, that he didn't consider it thievery.
See, I've always taken when it says a thing to be grasped, I've taken that to indicate but I see what you're saying. I guess I've always taken that to mean, you know, something that you cling to. This is mine.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna let go of it, or I'm not going to let you forget it.
Yeah, exactly. As if Joseph went around all the time saying, remember that dream I had? You're going to be bowing down to me.
Right.
Now, if there was evidence he was doing that,
that would be bad.
That would be bad. So he could have said he was God. We can combine our two points together. But instead, he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant and coming in the likeness of men. Actually, taking the form of a slave is also an appropriate translation there. But he made himself of no reputation. That's the essence of humiliation.
Right.
A lot of times, if you ask somebody, what does humiliation mean? It means that you were embarrassed. They think that the synonym, but it really isn't the concept of embarrassment. It's really from the concept to be humbled. And Jesus did something that you and I can't do. He humbled himself.
Even to the point of the cross.
Yes. That's something you and I can't do.
No.
Because humility is something that happens to us.
Yeah. We deserve the cross. He didn't. That's the difference, right?
Being humbled is always a passive when it comes to us. I am humbled because, you know, I did this, I know it's wrong, or whatever. Jesus is an active. He actually humbled himself.
Right. Yeah. He actually died.
Yes.
He had to will himself to die.
Yes. And took on himself the form of a servant. We can't put on ourselves the form of a servant because we start as a servant.
Right. And a poor, miserable, sinful servant, too.
Yes, exactly.
In fact, even rebellious servant.
And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Now, why would that be it was humiliation, but that's not what this word humbled mean. How did Jesus humble himself by dying on the cross? If you understand the term humble to do something that you don't have to do, but you do it anyway.
Well, of course, the cross is one of the worst forms of execution. In fact, the Romans themselves had a rule that none of their citizens could be crucified.
Right, right. Just as they had that rule about being whipped.
Right.
And that's how Paul was able to get to go to Rome, because they were whipping him, and then he was a Roman citizen.
Crucifixion was a terrible death, and they had it down to a science.
Yes.
And it was a miserable criminal's death.
I also look at it from a spiritual point of view. What did Jesus have to become in order for the cross to work?
He had to be, it's like cursed.
Yes.
Is everyone that hangs on a tree.
And
he had to be cursed by God.
Which means
God had to forsake him.
He became a sinner.
Right, of course.
I've often said that Jesus was the biggest sinner in the world. That's always a good way to start off.
He became the epitome of sin.
Yeah. In fact, that's actually a quote from Corinthians, that he became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of Christ in him, or of God in him. So that on the cross, God, and that's the only person we care about as to what's going on, regarded his own son as a sinner because he carried my sins and your sins.
Right.
Including now, and now we're getting back to Joseph, the sin of pride. The sin of jealousy. Mm-hmm. The sin of envy. Now, of course, Jesus could be accused of that.
But not convicted.
Exactly. That's well said. The Pharisees definitely thought that he wanted to be the king of the Jews, as he said. And they said, we have no king but
Caesar.
Yeah, of course. They were saying
they
that.
They didn't mean that either.
They didn't mean that either. They were saying that in front of Pontius Pilate. But the fact of the matter is that they had no king but God. That's who they recognized as their sole king. And yet, they were really angry at Jesus saying he was king. But he had the right to say that because he was king. One of the questions I got was, Jesus present at creation?
Of course.
And what verses would you use for that?
John chapter 1.
Yeah.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. Without him was nothing made that was made. And he was involved in creation.
Yeah, see, that's a real interesting passage, because on the one hand, we know that God the Father is creator, and yet
God
nothing was created.
Too.
Yeah. In fact, the first three verses are somewhat Trinitarian.
Right.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That would be referring to the Father. And then Jesus would be referring to the voice. And he said, let there be light.
Yes.
Remember, he is the Word.
The Word.
Yeah. I find that really... And, of course, it said the Spirit was on the face of the water. You want to phone us? 505-7850 in St. Louis, long distance.
1-800-730-2727.
Let's go talk to Larry. Hi, Larry.
Good afternoon, pastors. You know, we refer to Joseph as an anti-type of Christ. And if you look at Joseph's life as a divine arrangement for the preservation of his family, and he got his family all back together in the end, and then you make that parallel with Christ, a divine arrangement for the preservation of sinners, I think it fits very nicely.
Yes, in fact, is not Jesus, we talked about this last week, he becomes the new Joseph, the new Adam, the new Moses, where they had made mistakes, he made none. He becomes the new Israel, because he goes through 40 days and 40 nights without sin.
And yet he's faithful. Yes.
And yet he's faithful.
And the brothers, you know, there was a lot of animosity towards Joseph, but, you know, Jacob told these sons I have with the concubines, they don't want to behave right. And he looked at Joseph, and he always told Joseph, you're the one that respects and follows the orders of the family. And the other sons, he referred to them as like wild cattle.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Larry.
All righty.
Okay. And we're just going to go down the line here, and we're going to talk to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, pastors. Hi. What an interesting study this afternoon. When you were talking about the dominion of Christ, I was thinking of the verse in Colossians, and it goes along with, you know, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obedience to me. I know that's talking about Israel. It's talking about the people of God and talking about us. But it says in Colossians chapter 1, verse 16, for by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and by him all things consist. And then there's a verse back in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15:25 says, "For he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy
is
that
death.
Shall be destroyed is death."
Yeah.
"And he hath put all things under his feet. But when he saith all things are put under him, it is manifest that he is accepted, which did put all things under him." And he has the dominion right now, doesn't he?
You see, absolutely.
And that's a promise, isn't it?
That's a promise. He has dominion over every... By him, everything makes sense. And, you know, without him, everything is confusion. So...
And all things have to work together for our good. All things.
All things, yes. And, you know, even though they meant bad for Joseph, God was working it out for good. So, and same way with Christ, these jealous, the Pharisees, almost like, you know, a parallel there with the Pharisees seemed to be jealous of Jesus in the same way, but it worked out for good because, you know, Jesus died for our sins. Somehow that worked all together. And I guess those are my thoughts.
Well, okay, we're going to expand on them. Thank you for calling, Linda.
Thank you.
The point I want to make, Pastor Smith, is the promise, therefore, takes care of both problems we talked about today. The one problem is worry about the future.
Right.
If he holds all things...
We don't have to worry about the future.
The second thing is the problem that Joseph's brothers had with Joseph, that they seemed like they were going to be subordinates. Well, who cares?
Yes.
Well, with the promises of God, because as the Bible says, there's no distinction anymore between Jew and Gentile, male or female, slave or free. So from that point of view, things really work out. That, I think, is the main point of this story. The story is in here, as Larry pointed out, because we're getting a microcosm of Jesus, but we're also finding out how, through the Holy Spirit, we overcome fear of the future as well as fear of others' blessings and so forth. So I think Linda hit that on the head. We always come back to a promise somewhere. In fact, I bet when you go to hospitals, no matter what the situation is of the person, it's always a promise you bring to bear.
Yeah, you always try to leave them with a promise, absolutely.
And if it's surgery they're going into or having a baby, it doesn't really matter. You don't use the same promise. You use the promises that are appropriate for that. So, this week was Joseph and his brothers, and that was chapter 37. Next week for the Sunday school, Joseph's troubles. So, we're going backwards to chapter...
Potiphar's wife.
Yes, 39.
And probably his time in prison, too.
Yes, and we're going to see again something about dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, your church...
Yes, Prince of Peace Lutheran Church. It's just south of the Watson and New Sappington intersection, 8646 New Sappington Road. We have church on Sunday at 9 a.m., followed by adult Bible class and Sunday school. And we also provide the same service Saturday evening at 5 p.m.
Well, thank you very much for being with me, Pastor Mark Smith, and also the rest of you. Tomorrow we're going to be dealing with a number of emails that have come in. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.